This week, we head down the independent Japanese kaiju rabbit hole further with the first of director Shinpei Hayashiya's low-budget and highly irreverent monster films. Will this first period piece hold a candle to the likes of Godzilla, or will this series get snuffed out from its onset? There's only one way to find out. This is Kaiju vs. History, Rego, King of the Sea Monsters.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your drunken Gamera character actor, Miles, and joining me is a giant bonefish jumping on your poop deck, Patrick. Patrick, how you doing this week?
Ahoy, mateys. That's pirates, but yes, we said poop deck, so that's where my mind goes.
So it must mean...
pirates, yes. Good, good. I was very excited to get to this movie. Had you heard of this series... of this director before, Miles?
I had, only because like late night like Amazon scouring, or like because you watched blank, I kept seeing this one pop up over the 2010s. I never pushed play, but this was one I was kind of excited to get to because, you know, I had looked it up, you know, back in the day. I was like, oh, it's an independent kaiju film. That's kind of neat. And, you know, there's something to be said about scrappy little productions.
Yeah.
And I think the only difference between the scrappy little productions now and the scrappy little productions of like the 50s and 60s is that, you know, they're not tested to use practical effects. They just kind of use the cheapest CGI effects, especially from like your, well, since they were available in the 90s up to now, but especially in the early aughts and the 10s. I often take a stance of, you know, I'm fine with CGI as long as the story's there. But like at the same time, you're like, I can't help but thinking some of this stuff looks like a 1998 computer game.
I think I put in my notes somewhere like a PS2 cutscene.
Yeah. No, I mean,
maybe PS2 is a bit too advanced.
I mean, it depends on who's making it, because, man, if these looked like a Square Enix cutscene, that'd be a different story altogether.
Yeah. Well, it's just there's some bits in here where the digital aliasing and things like that are a bit much. And then there's just not a ton of definition to a lot of the models, which we'll talk about,
and that's really the problem for me. It's not that it's CGI. It's that it just feels like it's kind of incomplete detail wise.
Yeah. And one of the difficulties is it kind of has to be, because it all takes place on the ocean, you know, and it's, unless you have like a giant pool, which, you know, it's expensive. Hard to make a simulation. You know,
there are some pretty famous giant pools out there that I don't know how expensive it is to use those, but I'm mm-hmm. sure it is. But yeah, before we get talking about this film any further, and of course we are talking about Deep Sea Monster Rego, released in May of 2008. Patrick, tell us, what's in a title?
Well, you just stole my thunder, because that's one of the other titles, is Deep Sea Monster Rego. And indeed, I think when it came to SRS is when we got the Rego King of the Sea Monsters.
Mm.
And that title was chosen because SRS released this in the U.S. on DVD and I think maybe Blu-ray as well at the same time in 2019. Right around Godzilla, King of the Monsters. So, you know, Rego, King of the Sea Monsters, it's not too far off from that title.
It does kind of, the snifter test kind of makes it feel a little asylum-y.
Yeah.
But I know that isn't the intention.
No, it was, I mean, this came out obviously a while before those Godzilla movies, but the re-release, they're definitely trying to cash in a little bit on that title's fame. Mm-hmm. Before that, they took a VHS release for CRS, and it was called Rego, the Deep Sea Monster versus the Battleship Yamato. And I believe the direct Japanese translation is from Shinkaiju Rego is, you know, great kaiju or great monster Rego, deep sea monster Rego is a translation of it. And yeah, there weren't too many other titles throughout the world for this one. In Germany, there was an alternative title of Rego versus Yamato in a few places, including Japan as well. But yeah, in a couple places, Yamato, the battleship Yamato, got some titular billing, which, you know, almost the entire movie takes place on board the ship. So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I don't dislike. I mean, I kind of like it just being Rego, just because it's the monster's like first appearance. But Yamato versus Rego, or Rego versus Yamato, is a pretty good title as well.
Because the ship itself is kind of a co-star.
I feel like I've seen either the second or third movie in this series by the director Shinpei Hayashiya. But I'd never seen this one, and I don't know if it was just not on like Amazon Prime or what, but I did end up buying the trilogy from SRS. So I've got all three of them on Blu-ray.
Oh, wow.
And this movie, I guess I had heard of before and knew it was like a historical film set during World War II. It's got some great art to it. I should grab my copy. It's right on the shelf above me. It's still in the plastic. But yeah, had you heard about this one specifically before, Miles?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I had seen it on Amazon and kind of looked it up. And I mean, the movies like this are a little tougher to do because they do seem like they're genuine efforts. It doesn't have the same stink of like a Zarkor. You know, it feels like this director had made the fan film Gamera 4 Truth, which was supposed to be like the third in the, or the fourth in the Heisei Gamera series.
Yes, like a 40-minute film. And that movie also has extremely rough CGI.
It is very, very rough. But but you can tell this guy is very passionate about kaiju films. And so, I mean, I do appreciate that kind of independent spirit. It does make me be a little softer on the movie, but not that much, because this movie is it's all right. But I think what's odd about this film is it doesn't seem to land on its, it doesn't seem to figure out its tone, because there are some moments where it's trying to be comical and it doesn't really land. And I also, there are parts of this movie that are filmed in black and white, and then it just switches to color. And yeah, I disliked that a lot. Like the stuff that was done in like,
are kind of like flashbacks,
but not at the beginning. The beginning is like the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. I think we're supposed to assume that the entirety of the movie is they're already on the ship and this is like going backwards, but you don't really have context for that.
No, you don't.
Movie begins.
Well, that, because, you know, they have this scene where Takeshi and his grandma are doing the little flag stuff. And then the next scene is in color and she's, you know, waving him off as the ship takes off. And I was just like, what a weird break. It doesn't land for me. I understand what they're trying to do. I kind of wish the whole thing was in black and white.
Yeah, that would cover up some things, but I feel like you'd lose a little bit of the few special effects that they have. Some of the oomph if it wasn't in color. But yeah, for the most part, like I said, the majority of this movie takes place inside rooms inside the ship, which are just like white or beige painted. I mean, they're not actually on a battleship for those scenes. I don't believe they were filmed there. They just kind of look like office space, you know, that they've.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, you know, trying to utilize what you've got and use the theater of the mind to say that this is all taking place inside the vessel. Speaking of which, this is actually a real life vessel.
Yeah, that's the fun little history about this movie, is the movie in the title, or in some places, the battleship Yamato was a real ship, and it was not just the largest ship in the Imperial Japanese Navy. To this day, Miles, it's still the largest battleship ever created on Earth. They had to break some conventions, some Geneva-like conventions that were set off in the 30s to make this. They commissioned it right after Pearl Harbor and designed it to go toe-to-toe with American ships and really be the most powerful thing on the the Pacific Ocean. And
go ahead.
I was just going to say it's a Yamato class. They actually built two of them, but the first one was called the Yamato, and it's kind of like the flagship of the Imperial Navy.
It's interesting because, you know, that name has lasted in a lot of Japanese media going forward. There's a lot of science fiction that still uses the name Yamato, whether it's about a giant ship, battleship. But is it just called Spaceship Yamato or giant?
Space Battleship Yamato.
Yeah.
And there was another name when they brought it over here to the U.S., I think. But yeah, that's a spaceship that is also built to look kind of like Battleship Yamato. And it's a show from the late 70s, I think, or early 80s.
Yeah, it's from the 70s and 80s, I think.
Yeah, it was a huge success. There's many films, TV series. There's recently kind of like a Redux series, I think, that was done in 2017. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why it's stuck in the Japanese psyche, because it was a symbol of their nation's power, technical acumen, and things like that. It displaced twice as much water as the next two top American battleships combined, and had the largest deck guns ever attached to a battleship on its top deck. It was a small city. It had 3,000 soldiers aboard, and it was almost too large to see action because they never really sent it out in engagements. It was always kind of behind, and it only fired its battles once during its deployment, the Battle of Leyte Gulf. And the following year, in 1945, it was sent down to, I think, the Solomon Islands to assist in repelling invasion forces. And it was bombed out of existence by Allied planes. Like 100 planes dropped bombs on it and just absolutely destroyed it. And I think they kind of sent it in as a last ditch effort, kind of knowing it would probably be destroyed if they couldn't win. So, there's still a Battleship Yamato Museum in Japan where you can see like scale models and recreations of ship quarters and things like that. So it's still pretty darn popular, Miles. And we get some digital recreations of it. I would have loved if they had built a scale model for this movie, because there's so much stuff you can do with scale models details wise you can't do with CGI.
I agree completely. I think, you know, I don't know what their budget was. It clearly wasn't very much at all, but I think they would have absolutely benefited from having some sort of practical model. Just for, you didn't have to quite use it for the model scenes, but just, or for the monster scenes, but like just something to, like, you know, get that ship physically on the screen. Mm-hmm. But it also feels like there's, you know, some good stock footage used throughout too.
Yeah. There's some, I think, more early on in the film. It's hard once you get to the kaiju fighting the ship, you know, you have to go pretty much all CGI there. Yeah. You mentioned that Shinpei Hayashiya directed the Gamera 4 film basically right after, I guess, the shine kind of wore off from that project. He started thinking about making his own feature length film with his own monster, and kind of got some folks that were in the industry really to help out with him. Like we said, this is an independent film. It was distributed by Intermedia and had some support, but from what it seems, this was entirely a kind of a small team this project. But yeah, there's tons of kaiju film kind of luminaries that help bring this to life. The puppet and different sculpts of Rego that were used in the film were done by Tomo Haraguchi, as well as Shigeaki Ito. And I think they had both worked on various Ultraman shows and all three of the 90s Gamera movies. So there's a lot of ties with Gamera, particularly the 90s Gamera in this film. So he was able to get a lot of folks from kind of that world. Unfortunately, despite them having kind of some smaller models that they use for like close-up and things like that, there's no Suitimation for Rego, But well, a lot of CGI, a lot of designs. What did you think of the monster, the titular monster itself, Miles?
So, you know, what sucks, and this is a criticism that people often put on modern Godzilla movies, which I don't really think is a problem because, you know, you got $200 million at work and you can tell what's going on. But in a movie like this, where it's all at night, in the rain, in the dark, it's often very hard to make out the creature, even when it's in full view. We get a couple sequences. I don't hate the design. I like the idea of this, like, kind of aquatic creature with a, let's face it, a Godzilla head.
I mean, it's a lizard head.
It's a Godzilla kind of head.
Shaped like a little Leopleurodon style with the front flippers, but. Yeah, I mean, it is supposed to evoke kaiju, and what better way to evoke kaiju than
Godzilla-ish. I don't really have a problem with the design itself. I honestly wouldn't mind seeing a better realized version of it, or clearly seeing the monster. We get a couple of shots of, there's a couple of practical shots of the head. They had a couple shots that looked pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Like I said, I understand why they didn't make a full suit of Rego, because they just had nowhere to practically film it, you know?
Yeah, and an aquatic suit like that would be very difficult.
I mean, if not impossible at this budget. For me, I enjoy the design of it. I think it is a little safe, but it is its own original thing. We just, so rarely do we get actual sea creatures like this.
And that's what I appreciate about it too.
Yeah. So I, like I said, I'd seen one of the sequel movies, which is all kind of land-based kaiju. And I enjoy that design a good deal as well. I kind of like how chonky the arms are in this movie. The flippers are for Rego. And they have like a little circular pad, which you will find on some lizards and things like that, kind of like almost like an elbow pad in the design that carries through to Rega, the sequel monster. But yeah, love the flippers, like the overall design. The face, yeah, once you get to the small up-close model, it's very demonic. It's got super Godzilla-like, craggly skin. And yeah, well, the few looks of it close-up we do get, I believe that this is something that could live, you know, at the bottom of the ocean or wherever it is in this movie.
I mean, that's the great thing about the imagination and things of this type, where like the bottom of the ocean is so vast and kind of unexplored in some areas, that like, or in a lot of areas, that you can't help but wondering, well, what if? I mean, yes, the creature like this would need something to sustain its, you know, its mass food wise, but
there's 3,000 sailors aboard the Yamato. There you go. It's like
right, yeah, chomp chomp. But like, that's what's like fun about like even the original
rice. You ever?
Yeah, and that's what's
if
fun
I'm
about,
ever
like,
hungry,
you know, watching,
for 3,000 of something, I go for some rice.
That's what's fun about like watching stuff like, or even in the original books, like the Meg, where it's like, oh yes, we found one of these things and it followed us back, you know, and you can't help but enjoy that kind of stuff.
And very similar Godzilla in the beginning of this movie, we get an old fisherman telling tale about the monster and how it needs to feed, needs to come up and feed. Yeah, I was pretty surprised at the beginning of the movie. The shooting on location, like the daytime shots especially that they got in this film, it felt very much like a real movie, you know, and also a pretty well-directed film. And then I think when you get in like 20 or 30 minutes into this film or so, and all the rest of it takes place on board the ship, I don't feel like production suffers, but definitely the value of the production goes down a little bit, where it does feel closer to one of those lower budget kaiju films. But you know, like we said, they're spending their dollars where they can in this movie.
I think what makes the weaknesses in this film show more is the actual script itself. Granted, the provided this film as of recording was on Tubi, and when turning on the subtitles also aren't that accurate. Like, there's stuff that's misspelled and some words that are misplaced that I kind of wonder if some of it wasn't lost in translation. So it could have just be a rough localization, because it feels like the script, like the plot is there. Like, as far as like all the things that happen for the most part are perfectly fine. But I just feel like, you know, you don't really get a lot of the characters. You just get a lot of kind of pantomime and superficial stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's hard because we're not even a year away from having just watched Godzilla Minus One, which is a very similar film. You know, they take out Godzilla on board giant battleships at the end of that movie, and it is also kind of a period piece film, a very similar time period, the 1940s. But this movie is a little more soaked in kind of national pride for Japan.
Yeah, there is a weird kind of imperialist nature to that, what I don't feel like I see in a lot of Japanese films.
Well, I feel like it's almost kind of black humor, because the movie like ends with them talking about how if they can defeat Rego, this giant sea monster, they can slay the dragon that is America, you know, the Yamato will be able to take it on. And then they're all cheering. And then the very next scene is like the narration being like, yep, Yamato got destroyed real bad the following year and just bombed out of existence.
The ending is a wild choice. I mean, everything about the ending is wild. And it's like, oh yeah. And then some planes thought they saw a big shadow. And I was like,
oh yeah. And we see the destruction of the Yamato and like a kabuki version of death, maybe.
Yeah,
I'm not too familiar with those.
I don't know characters enough to know if that's dumb or not. It felt dumb though.
He has like fires, like it looks like little pieces of paper, like scraps of paper, and
repelling the Allied planes, and the thing that brought it down was Rego.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's what we're supposed to believe is, or maybe Rego's offspring came back for revenge and destroy their Yamato eventually. The last scene I really did enjoy, which has our main character's love interest and the
most undercooked romance I have seen in quite some time.
Yeah, and the Officer Osako's wife and now, like, you know, 5-year-old kid walking up to the shrine that we see them in the beginning of the movie. I enjoyed that. I thought it was very
honestly, I thought that was really good too.
It's definitely the ending to a better movie, you know.
It is. It that's the correct last scene, but whatever happened before is like, I mean, I just remember being like, wait, what is going on? The movie ended.
Yeah,
like we beat the monster, and like it'd been fun if even just like you had this epilogue and like a little like thing about how the fate of the Yamato, like, because most Japanese filmgoers know the fate of the Yamato, even if us Americans don't, you know, this is a big deal for them. So like it would be like, you know, I'm trying to find something that doesn't sound like super shocking, but like it's an adventure that involves someone who worked at the World Trade Center, and we see them go in to work on September 11th or some dumb stuff like that.
Yeah, we don't need a version of death like tapping them on the shoulder while they work. It's like, yeah, we understood what happened.
Right. And so I feel like just even like a little, like, you know, some text across the screen, you know, after or before Chie's scene, which I agree with you. I think it's a great scene. I think they underutilized that subplot in general.
Well, I think in total, one of my main problems with this movie is, like I said, we just watched Godzilla Minus One, and that movie worked because it is like really solely focused on your one main character and his path to redemption. And this movie is more like a collection of folks. We've got Kaido, who's like our young hotshot, sub-lieutenant Kaido. You've got Osaka, who's played by one of my favorite Gamera actors, Yukijiro Hotaru, who plays...
Is he the detective?
Yes, he played the detective in the Gamera series, who turns into a security guard, who turns into a vagrant. Inspector Osako in those movies. But here he's maybe a that character is a descendant of this Osako. I like that they're just named this the same. Then you get different officers on the ship who honestly take up a lot of screen time. For a lot of this movie is about the decision making process of like how they're going to deal with the monster, and we get a subplot of an American sailor who survives a Reiko attack who just happens to speak like really good Japanese.
I mean they basically took someone that they knew that could say a couple of English words, dyed his hair blonde, and just call it a day.
Yeah, that's about as far as they went. Yes, indeed. Pretty funny, I think.
So I think that was funny. I feel like that was done. I feel like they were very aware of what this situation was.
Yeah.
I did find that very funny. But I mean, like, you know, we talk about Godzilla Minus One, and it's like, but also that movie had like a freaking amazing deep script that would have worked with, even without the monster. This movie does not have that. If this movie had an amazingly deep script, like every flaw I could have given it, or every flaw that was on screen could be forgiven.
I really just wish they had leaned into just one kind of character and given us a little bit more of them. But
yeah, I fully agree with you, because like they don't write an ensemble. They have an ensemble worth of characters, but like none of them are feeling individualized. Everyone feels like a pastiche of something else. And then they get weird scenes, like the guy who just freaking murders his cantaloupe breakfast.
Yeah, there's a couple weird scenes. I like, actually, one of my favorite parts is the showing the ship life on board the Yamato, and like their like talent show kind of stuff that they do.
Oh yeah, because they get rewarded for, you know, a good job. So like I'm releasing like two cases of sake.
Yeah. Another just like favorite part of the movie is when at the end when they're celebrating defeating the Reiko, and like they're talking about how they're gonna defeat America, the POW that they have is like, wait, that's me.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
Oddly the comical.
The subtitle was like, wait, I'm USA, but like he actually says, I'm enemy. I'm enemy.
I'm enemy.
Yeah, like moments like that are like genuinely funny. And I know they're supposed to be funny, but then there's other moments where like there's some weird comical stuff with some of the like, I guess, cast that we get introduced halfway through, like the guy with the one eye patch.
Yes, who's,
and then like his, I think, a staple burst or something
in these movies. I think that is probably more of a Japanese kind of stereotype character, because he'll come back in the series.
Boy oh boy.
Shinpei kind of like reuses some of the stock characters, and obviously I just said his name, Yukijiro Hotaru, comes back in the other movies as well in similar ways that he just kept coming back in the Gamera movies. But yeah, there's it attempts at a lot of humor in this movie, but it gets even more absurd in the later films. This one's actually kind of pretty reserved. Do you have a favorite scene, Miles?
Gosh, you know what's one scene that's really well done to me that actually does kind of, in a better movie, would have functioned very well, is when he's reading one of the letters to Chie that has Chie that has her photo, and like the guy is like, crewmate is like not picking on him, but like, ooh, you have a fiance. And we get to see a little bit of Takeshi Kaido's pathos, and I appreciate that scene a lot. It really worked for me. I was also really curious as to like the second letter he gets from her, which we as the audience get the whole thing read, I guess, because I'm assuming that's not what's censored. I also don't understand what is supposed to be censored from all that.
Yeah, I was about to say the vast majority of the letter that we see is censored. I feel like 80% of it is like blacked out. And in it, she does write some stuff that I guess they would censor, like, you know, it's hard rationing food and yada, yada.
Oh, you're right.
But yeah, a lot of it is just, you know, stuff that would have been great for their personal relationship to grow.
Yeah, and I would have maybe like some more flashback sequences from like their actual life, because like, you know, she says, oh, I'm wanting to be a great wife for you. I'm like, okay, did not realize that was really on the table there. Because homeboy just prefaced like 15 minutes earlier that, oh, no, she's a childhood friend. And treats her as such at the beginning of the movie. Like, we do get that scene of them, like, kind of tumbling on the rocks together. That scene kind of romantic that we don't really get any sort of conclusion to.
Pretty romantic for 1943 or whenever this was.
I guess, but not for me. But I liked that a lot. And as far as a humorous scene, I love when he thinks he's... What's his name? The drunken gunner guy.
Osaka?
Osaka, yeah. I love when he thinks he's about to hook up with that one girl and then... The grandpa's under there.
Yeah,
that was, and we get the actual like legend of Rego. I thought that was a really fun, again, a scene where the humor worked. It was very funny to me.
His first scene where they're in he's at the temple with his wife and he's praying for a baby with a penis.
Oh yeah, yeah, because he starts chanting penis.
Yeah,
that was great. Again, like, there are parts of this movie where the humor really, really works. And it's endearing and funny, and it seems real within the context of the film. And there's other scenes where I'm just like, what is going on here? But yeah, that all the stuff that like had hints of like dimension to the characters was mostly my favorite parts, because honestly, you know, a lot of the monster stuff, I hate to say it, was a little ho-hum.
Well, that's I think the main criticism I want to get to here is highlighted.
What was your favorite part?
Well, besides anything with Yukijiro, Hotaru, I think what I've changed my background here to the Blu-ray cover for this film. And it's the scene where Rego leaps out of the water and like crests over the Yamato and lightning strikes. It's pretty wicked looking. And even with, you know, the limited CGI that they had, I feel like that was pulled off pretty well. And it's, you know, something that they realize they can kind of take advantage of later on in the film when they shoot it, when it jumps out of the water again. I think it's also funny that it kind of just whips the ship with its tail as it goes over there. But yeah, there's not a lot of kaiju destruction action. There's one point where CGI head eats a sailor, like just pops it in its mouth, which is kind of funny. But that I want to point out, the highlighted review on IMDb is titled "For Hardcore Kaiju Fans Only." And I wondered if you thought that was the truth as well, Miles. Do you think a casual audience goer could enjoy this film, or do you need a good amount of kind of kaiju under your belt before you can enjoy this one?
I mean, I don't think there's any prerequisite for enjoying this movie. If you like and can not stomach, but like if B and C grade films don't turn you off and you can enjoy them for what they are, then absolutely. But, you know, I would also kind of agree with that assessment. Like, even as a kaiju fan, like, yeah, this is not something I'm going to, you know, refer someone to, you know, firsthand. I think it does need to get some proper, you know, respect for being an independent picture that is active. Like, that's the thing, is you can tell this is a little bit of a labor of love. You can tell they're actively trying to make something that evokes classic kaiju movies in a time where, you know, there's not a ton of, you know, and, you know, at this point, Godzilla has been gone for what, 4 years, 5 years?
This is 2009.
Yeah. So 5 years, you know, half a decade with no Godzilla film. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think kaiju hardcore fans should check it out just for its place in kaiju history. I think it's interesting and unique. But yeah, I in terms of enjoyment, yeah, this I would say it's for hardcore fans only to a degree. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think folks on Letterboxd maybe agree with that assessment. It got 2.9 stars out of 5. So, you know, it's pretty down there as kind of like what would be considered our good territory. I definitely think that Eureka, God of the Monsters, the sequel and the third film, Rega came out in 2009. So this one's 2008. And then the third film, which took over another decade to come out, God Rega versus King Oga, War of the Monsters, came out in Japan in 2019. I think either of those are kind of your more traditional kaiju stomping around, destroying buildings, even though they're they get even more irreverent and kind of comedic in some ways. And yeah, continue on this series. I think those are probably better for your first watches. But let's get into our rating, because my personal enjoyment, as interested as I was in the history of this film, as interested as I was to watching this, I'd only watched clips of this movie before buying these DVDs. Like I said, I think I watched the second one before. But yeah, this is some of the deepest cuts as you can get, the deepest of the deep kaiju cuts. They're not always readily available. I feel like one of the movies is available on Prime right now, and I think you said they're available on Tubi as well.
Yes. I've only looked, I'm looking right now.
A lot of SRS stuff kind of comes.
Yeah, I can't see if Rega, God of the Monsters, is...
The third one is available with on Freevee, so I think it's probably going to be on Tubi as well.
Yeah, and I haven't seen... Let's see, God, Rega...
But for me, this movie is kind of a smorgasbord of
They're on there.
Kaiju action, independent kaiju action. I think I am its target audience. That being said, I still only like this movie. I love a lot about it. I love that it kicks off kind of its own little universe. But most of what I love about it is what I see as its ambition and not the final product. The final product, the scale with the budget that they had, you know, they actually attempted something and failed, but failed in good ways. So my personal enjoyment is a 7 out of 10. I think it's very good. It's a good start, and I think he continues on to make some interesting movies after this. What about you, Miles?
So I'm a little harsher on this movie, because I agree that it deserves respect for being a genuine independent attempt at a kaiju film. I think that that is clear. The love is absolutely clear. For my personal enjoyment, though, it movie does drag a lot. I did find myself checking my watch a few times, or my phone for that case.
And it's only like 80 minutes. It's very, a very short one.
It's very short and doesn't feel like, and that's always a problem for me. Obviously, the kaiju action isn't as entertaining. And yeah, this is a big swing. And yeah, it's a foul ball. It's not total failure. It's not, you know, a Zarkor and with that. But if we were doing half scores, I'd give it 5.5 stars or out of 10, but or 5.5 out of 10. But I think I got, for my personal enjoyment, I have to be realistic. And you know, I think it's baseline good. I think it's worth watching for hardcore fans. But at the same time, because I'm kind of reflecting on, as I often do when I do this, you know, what our ratings kind of mean, and you know, for our purposes, I think that this one is, you know, mixed feelings, you know, flawed but worthy. And I definitely feel like that. I feel very mixed about it. It does some things decently. I love the attempt. It's scrappy, and I will always respect that, which will go more into my evocative than anything else. But so, yeah, 5 out of 10.
What about technical aspects of the film? You've mentioned in the past CGI usually doesn't bother you, but
nope, it doesn't. And it still doesn't really. For me, a lot of what I slam this film is the inconsistent tone, the lack of development of characters. I understand why they can't get full use of the monster in the story, but at the same time, this movie really feels like it needs some good monster moments and doesn't have them. Like, it doesn't deliver the goods per se. And in a kaiju film that is basically on the spectacle of the kaiju, that's why we bought a ticket, you know, that's why we pressed play. I do have to knock it for that. There is, you know, a lot of attempts at trying to kind of make the movie look a little bit bigger than it is. And I appreciate that. So I'm docking it pretty hard for that script and for, you know, obviously the lack of good monster action, but I'm still gonna give it a 6 out of 10. I think it's still a valiant effort.
Yeah. I'm right there with you at a 6. I think the technicals are probably where this movie suffers the most. And part of that for me is that, I mean, like, even other very cheap movies at the time, I think, had, you know, slightly better graphics, you know, like even if we look at something like a monster, like an Asylum film, I'm surprised that they went as hard and on some of them here. And with all the technical know-how from physical model builders and things that they have from the Gamera universe, I was just hoping for a little bit more there. So
Yeah, I'm 100% with you.
This one for me, the CGI isn't that much of a bother, but it is inconsistent over like what scenes that they use. So there is CGI that's like up close that looks a little bit better, and then some of the like further stuff just looks very blocky and kind of loses you. And then they're trying to do stuff like rain and CGI at night and things like that, and it just makes it, you know, even harder to kind of get behind and watch and enjoy. The script is a little overplaced. I think the middle section is where this seems to suffer the most. And like I said, I kind of wish we had focused on Takeshi maybe as our main point of the view character, because he eventually does make his way into the command structure and like his plan gets picked. So like we would have gotten that side of it. Yeah. And yeah, I feel like most of the actors here are doing a pretty good job. Just the story's a little lackluster overall. For its importance, where this ranks in kaiju cinema history, this is really, for me, the start of the very much a poster child for independently made kaiju in Japan. Shinpei Hayashiya is, you know, filling a huge void that started after Final Wars in 2004 and, you know, will not really be finished until 2016 Shin Godzilla. So what, 12 years of no Godzilla in Japan?
Yeah, although we are just a couple years shy of the great Gamera the Brave.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is after that. So
what we give that a 15 out of 10, I think.
You did.
Yeah,
The Gamera 4 movie is honestly one of my white whales at this point. As terrible as it looks.
I've seen clips. I'm not sure if they.
I still want to watch it. I still would love to see
it. Is it not available anywhere?
Oh, no, nowhere. So yeah, I'm giving it a 6 out of 10 for its importance. I think it is a important start, and we get into a more fun movie next year, the following year with Ray Ga, which gets a little crazy. we'll talk about it when we get to it, but this is like the serious, not as fun uncle. But what about you? What
I mean, my great white whale is, you know, Godzilla versus Wolfman. I know, but you're talking about your great white whale, and that's absolutely one of mine. I'm sorry, what was your final score for that one?
6.
It's tough because I think as far as an evocative film, that this movie hits all the right notes it needs to as far as, you know, its kaiju beats. And I agree with you. This is very important for independent kaiju cinema, for like people, you know, kind of making or attempting to make the movies that people still love, even though we have these, you know, these great kaiju movies that have the GDP of a small country out in theaters. I miss the scrappy guys in suits. I miss the practical dioramas and seeing them explode and seeing some great model work and these artists have, you know, getting their, not that CGI artists aren't artists, but like, you know, seeing some of this real physical work, because look, and as a defender of CGI, nothing looks better on screen than something that is physically there. It just doesn't. And so this film also showcases. So, you know, on one hand, I'm inclined to give this a higher score, but also the movie itself is a little lackluster, despite the fact that it kind of starts something. So I'm right there with you. I think I'm going to give this a 6. Like I was walking in like thinking I might give this a little bit of a higher score, but I think you're right on the money there. I think 6 is the right place for it, because despite the fact that all the good stuff it does, let's not overstate what the film actually is, which is just.
So I'm a hard 6. You're a light 6 for our final scores, which obviously means the final score is 6 out of 10 for.
I'm like, that means it's 7. Why not?
No. And I honestly, I was hoping it was going to be a little better. The next movie, I kind of want to watch the next one like immediately. but as far as our recording schedule go, we have like 5 movies before we get back to Rega in 2009, which will close out season 6 of the podcast here. But yeah, I'm happy to have finally watched this one, and like you, it's probably not one I'll go back to very often, but I'm glad I have the Blu-ray if I do want to watch like a good, you know, cut, a good version of it. Right. That's going to do it for this episode. Folks can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter, other social media kind of sites, Kaiju Versus History. Visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com, and read, rate, review our podcast, and take a look at our letterbox. We're Kaiju Versus History on Letterboxd. You can see all of every movie we've ever reviewed on the podcast in 5-star format there. And also take a look at what's in our upcoming watch list. We still have a lot of kaiju movies after this, Miles. Just take a look at the list. This is episode 151, and I think we have at least another 100 kaiju films somewhere in there.
Heck yeah.
What are we doing next week, Miles?
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick. And thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next week when we take a look at an outlandish and committed take on kaiju's history with the return of a monster that few remember and even fewer love. A satirical glance at modern politics infused with an old school monster suit that looks straight out of the 1960s. That's right. Tune in next week for History Versus Monster X Strikes Back, Attack the G8 Summit.